Welcome back to Athens Happens. I'm Aidan McDougall, digital content producer for The New Political.
And I'm Megan Taylor, digital content creator for The New Political.
Athens Happens is a podcast brought to you by The New Political, a student publication dedicated to explaining the nuances of Ohio University, Athens, and state politics.
You can find new episodes at thenewpolitical.com or wherever else podcasts can be downloaded.
It's 2024, an election year, and the political stage is essentially already set for another pivotal election. So, let's be honest, this is just another rematch of Trump versus Biden, the same battle we saw in 2020. But this time things are a little different. Both of the leading candidates have presidential experience, and with that, every move they make will dominate headlines for the upcoming months.
This year will be filled with echo chambers of public opinion and a battleground of ideas, potentially focusing on a few main pillars like the economy, abortion, and immigration. The largest focus for polls will most likely revolve around approval ratings and polling in a few swing states and toss-up states like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona, and Georgia.
I guess the biggest thing that has dominated headlines as of early 2024 is the disagreements between the federal government and the government of Texas, and that being Joe Biden and Greg Abbott and the Supreme Court of the United States, and how there has been a very large, or at least an all-time high, of illegal immigration crossing from Mexico into Texas. I mean, from just the reported numbers in 2022 itself, there was an all-time high in December with a total of 249,785 arrests on the Mexican border, and that's up from 31% from November of 2022, and like just how that growth from Trump's administration due now later in Biden's administration, Greg Abbott has decided to step in and protect the border in the way that he seemed fit, and that was introducing that razor wire along the border, which in itself wasn't placed in a way that was going to stop anyone, to stop what they were saying vehicles were there. There weren't. There were just people crossing a river, and the razor wire did stop them. Like, it was there. It stopped them. Not in the best way. Not in a very humane way, if you will. But then they got challenged by the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court of the United States said, you can't do that. You can't put that there and just be in control of it. And then it comes down to a whole big disagreement between the Constitution and what the Constitution says, and Governor Abbott in his statement decided to cite the Constitution in what he thought was his best way of saying that, quote, James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, and the other visionaries who wrote the U.S. Constitution foresaw that states should be left to the mercy of a lawless president who does nothing to stop external threats like cartels smuggling millions of illegal immigrants across the border, end quote. And also citing a couple other Supreme Court cases, such as Arizona v. United States in 2012, but specifically citing Justice Scalia's opinion, a dissenting opinion to note. And that Greg Abbott also said that the failure of the Biden administration to fulfill the duties imposed by Article 4, Section 4, has triggered Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3, which reserves to this state the right for self-defense. So, with that, Greg Abbott has said that he will do what is in his power to protect the border, and that way he has been, or that he will introduce his National Guard to protect that border, and that has been agreed upon by other governors from Alaska, Nevada, Utah, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, North and South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, Indiana, Ohio, West Virginia, Virginia, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, and Alabama. All of those governors have agreed with Greg Abbott in his right for self-defense under the state's constitution, in his notion that the state is under a threat of, quote, invasion. So that's what the biggest thing has been dominating headlines as of right now. And I think that the way that it's been mentioned, the way that it's been talked about throughout the, I guess, through certain media outlets is just the fact that, oh, we might see another civil war. And I don't think we will. I think financially, on so many levels, economically, on pretty much the same thing, but I think economically on a whole lot of levels that it is not going to be a positive thing. And I don't think it's a thing that we will see. I think it's just a fun little strong arm thing of like, hey, I have the power to do this, from Greg Abbott, and then Biden just being the way that he is and just go, man, don't do that. And I think that it's not going to play out well for voters and the way that they see it and the way that they still want to protect our border from illegal immigration from Mexico. But again, that becomes a party issue, which I think is where we're kind of at right now, of the whole view on it, of like if it's good or bad. Or, and I think that has some influence on polling as of right now, but again, that I'll say forever, is polling doesn't win elections. It's just how you campaign, and it's how you fight on, you fight and stand for the issues that you believe in. But again, it's politics on a national level, so half of it is just not real. Half of it is just lying and poking fun at things that you say you're going to do and never fulfill your promises, because welcome to national politics. Well, do you think we'll see a civil war?
No, I don't think it'll be, I don't think it will cause a civil war. I don't think it's going to escalate that much, and especially it being an election year for Joe Biden, I think he would probably look for a solution somewhere in the middle. That'd be crazy, because all the states that would join Texas would be all the states that would win a civil war.
Yeah.
And all the states that don't join, you know.
That's why I think it's a big party issue.
Yeah, I think it's a party issue, but I think that at the end of the day, Joe Biden and Greg Abbott will both realize what's at stake here, especially for President Biden and it being a re-election year. So I think that there will be some solution or something that's going on that'll stop it from escalating to that bad.
No, but I think that brings, like, us to, like, the whole point of, like, discussing an election year and what, like, revolves around it, because I feel like if it's just an off year, if it's just, you know, 2022, I don't think we would have a whole back and forth between the state of Texas and President Biden battle of, oh, a potential civil war. I think it's because it's an election year, that is the whole reason we're seeing it. It's the whole reason it's just going to get told over and over throughout, like, larger media outlets, and the way that it's just going to be essentially blown out of proportion the way that every single thing is that happens with an election year. That is why every single time you're going to turn on a TV, for the ones that still watch mainstream TV or mainstream, like, media outlets, it's just going to be something major political that has very little significance or very small chance of taking off. And it's like the same way that COVID dominated, like, media stuff, and like that later 2020 was just because it was still fresh presidency, but this is also still happening. And then, like, before, of like, oh, what could happen, what is this thing, what is this? It's just like everything kind of blows up for an entire year revolving around very specific politics things, and then right after it happens, it just kind of dies off. Like, whenever you have, like, an incumbent, or whenever you have an incumbent win re-election, a lot of those harsh stories kind of die off on, like, a broad level. Granted, specific outlets will still focus on those hard-hitting things, like, essentially ones that are on the opposite political spectrum are going to focus on those hard-hitting stories, while the ones that probably align with, like, the presiding or the sitting president probably won't. Like, they're just going to gloss over them and be like, well, that happened, but also this. But right now, it's just a big, here's everything that's ever happened. So outside of the two leading front runners for president being Biden and Trump, for the Republican Party, there is still Nikki Haley. She's still running, and she didn't do too hot in the Iowa caucus, but she did pretty well, respectfully, in the New Hampshire primary. But I guess a thing that she has been a little bit more focused on from what I've seen from speeches, I don't know if it's just from what I've seen, like, just pop up on, like, X, formerly Twitter, but, or, like, other social media things, is just her stance on abortion, how it's a little different from Trump's, and how it's, I mean, collectively different from, like, the GOP stance on, like, certain issues. But I know, Megan, you know a little bit more about it, because I don't really focus on it too much, because I was like, she'll say stuff, and I'm like, okay, cool, great. You're probably not going to win. It would be fun. Like, I wouldn't hate to see a woman president. I don't care what party. It'd still be fun to have it. But I just don't focus on her issues because I'm like, she can say what she wants to say. Trump's still going to win that GOP stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, I would say I think her biggest issue is that her stance on abortion flip-flops. So she's kind of insinuated a few times, like, I think it should be up to the states, or it's not the government's place to make that decision, saying that she's personally pro-life. Other times it's been that she would support a federal ban. So I think that's her biggest, like, flip-flop and weak point. Because with that, I would also say, I think the GOP stance on abortion is firm. However, I don't think it's truly all that representative of the entire, of everybody who would identify themselves politically as a Republican. I think we've seen, even in the state of Ohio, we've seen in a few other states and through recent elections, abortion is used as a party issue between candidates, but I think when it comes down to people, it's not as much of a party issue as we think. I think, generally speaking, pro-choice policies or allowing people to just leave that decision up to themselves is something that's crossing over into Republican people who might not be Trump supporters, if that makes sense. So I just kind of think that if Nikki Haley would stick to a position specifically letting it stay up to the states or trying to, it would be crazy, but supporting a bring back of Roe v. Wade or whatever. But I think that's what her biggest issue is. If she chose a stance on abortion, stuck with it, and namely, it was not to support a federal ban, I think she would have a lot of success, especially with female Republican voters.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't disagree with any of that at all, but I think Ohio specific is the fact that in, like, last November, we had issue one, which was titled The Right to Reproductive Freedom with Protections for Health and Safety, which passed with 2 million votes for it and about 2.2 million votes for it and about 1.6 million votes against it. But it did pass, enshrining the right for an abortion in Ohio's constitution. Yes, that has raised certain legal challenges, but I think from November 2023 compared to November 2020 is a little different, because that passed with, or that issue one passed with 2.2 million votes. In 2020, Donald Trump won the state in that election with 3.1 million votes, and Biden got 2.6 million votes. So, I mean, yes, less people turn out for certain elections and stuff like that, but the fact that it's still is a choice that was up to the people and made in that way, I think shows a little bit more than just, I mean, I think that it is a more personal issue now than it is more of a party issue, I think, because, I mean, the way that I see it, it comes exactly down to the person who is having an abortion, who wants to have one or doesn't want to have one, whoever is pregnant and feels the need to seek reproductive care in the way that they feel is fit, not being told by someone else, hey, you have to do this with that. So, I think, like, Ohio specific, it just shows a lot that the people are taking charge and leading in what they want to see.
I think something else we can see with it is almost just, and I could be way off base, but just that reproductive rights and abortion is an issue that's quickly fading. Like, we had Roe v. Wade. There were groups of people who didn't support it, but for the most part, you know, it stayed intact for X amount of years. And then it was overturned two summers ago. And now states like Ohio, yes, a swing state, but a Trump state, we're deciding, like, no, we want to protect abortion. We want to protect reproductive freedom. And you're seeing that also in other red states or other swing states. So I think it's just an issue. It's becoming less of Republican, Democrat, and more so a lot of people want to protect that right in a small group or a smaller group of people, not the entire Republican Party itself. Or, you know, it's not making any sense. Anyways, I think that the issue itself is such a hot topic, but it doesn't need to be, and people are starting to realize that. Republican states are wanting to enshrine that right. So I just think in that sense, it would actually gain support if Nikki Haley was a Republican candidate who was in support of just not the federal ban. I think just not supporting a federal ban would do measures.
So I guess another leading factor that we've seen in news outlets, to polls, to quite literally every person's mind, or at least every young voter's mind, is this known unknown of both the leading candidates are up there in age. Biden's 81, Trump's 77. Trump 77. But, and it comes down to, like, the reason I would call it a known unknown is because, like, yes, we know they're old, but we don't know how long they're going to live. And I think that's, like, and I'm not like, oh, you get up there, you're just going to kick the bucket. Being president is the most stressful thing that we, like, have, like, well, for some people. I'm not going to say that. I mean, being president is a very exerting and stressful job. I mean, you're the most powerful you're the most powerful person in the free world, and to have that job is a lot, but to go through four more years of a job like that for someone who is 81, you don't know. Like, you don't know what can be brewing in the body, like, health-wise at that point, because, I mean, if something's going wrong, you're not going to sit there and tell the whole American public that, hey, this man, he ain't doing too hot. Like, I mean, it might come up if he has to go to some hospital and then people are going to freak out. Like, it's not a whole broadcasted thing. They're just like, oh, I guess this happens. And they're not going to give you full details, because the moment you give full details, some other country is going to be like, well, I guess they're a little weak right now.
It's definitely something that I think voters are thinking about coming up to the election. Who is each candidate running with their vice president, I think is something that's going to matter a lot here just because of their age, you know? it'll definitely be a factor, I think, in the back of voters' minds, if not at the forefront of when people are deciding which candidate they're going to support, and especially because it's both of them. Like, the Republican and the Democratic most likely candidate is going to be President Biden and former President Trump. So it's going to be all eyes on the VP and who they select. And I think especially in comparison to President Biden's approval ratings. Vice President Harris has not had as much approval or support from the people, so that'll be important. But it'll be equally as important to look at who former President Trump chooses, because we know it won't be former VP Mike Pence. So, I mean, has he announced...
No,
it'll be no. So
I don't think it's been said yet. I mean, there's been guesses of like it could be this or that, but I think, I mean, that's another thing that's just gonna, like, I mean, just talking about it is just gonna be a thing that is going to be at the forefront of headlines for weeks until it's announced, of like, who's Trump gonna pick? Who's Trump gonna pick? Is he gonna do this one? Is he gonna do this one? Like, that's gonna just be a big thing that we're gonna see, and just not, and it's just gonna gloss over all these other stories that are happening in the world right now and every other thing that happens, because our focus in a country that has quite literally like the longest election season in the world, that's just what we focus on. We focus on all of that collectively. And I think another thing that you brought up, which is an important factor, is like those approval ratings and disapproval ratings, is like, how much does the general public like the person that's in office? How much do they like the person that's running? How electable are they? It's just that electability of a person, which comes down to the job of, like, I mean, essentially just a campaign manager, but also when you're running national levels, that comes down to your DNC, which is kind of what you focus on, like with that whole Iowa caucus, is they're just polling essentially, and like who people want to see and who are they going to caucus for. So the RNC, and that comes down to that term of electability. But very specifically, Biden has as last time I checked, a 39% approval rating, 39.2% maybe around there. But that's how much of, from what has been polled from, I think from the, or he's like a 39% approval rating somewhere around there from like the, from an ABC poll that is constantly going all the time, checking throughout the year, whatever, with whatever they do and whoever they poll. But I think that is a big determining factor in who we're going to see and how like people feel about like each of these elections.
Yeah. And I mean, even looking at bigger issues, the way that President Biden has been handling involvement with Israel and what's happening in the Gaza Strip is, I mean, he's losing support from his party. And I think that so long as that continues, he will probably continue to lose support. The longer it goes on and the more people are outraged and speaking out about it. So that's also, it's an election year. He's dealing with this huge crisis that he's involved in, or he's supporting, and then his own party is pretty much disagreeing with him across the border, across the line.
Well, I mean, as we steadily get closer to elections, I mean, we have the same thing over and over of, it comes down to these battleground states, these swing states, or now what we kind of have like toss-up states. And I know you mentioned them in the very beginning, but how do you think those will play out throughout the year with what we've seen with quite literally everything?
I would say my guess is that these swing states are going to be more of a toss-up in this election than they were maybe in 2020. Now, I mean, 2020, the pandemic was probably one of the biggest things on people's radar. The spike for support in the Black Lives Movement was a huge aspect of how people decided in that election. And then I think for now, it's probably coming down to things like abortion and probably support for Joe Biden and his involvement with Israel are big things. And obviously we don't know what else is going to unfold this year, but I do think looking at what the issues are this year compared to 2020, I think there's a greater chance that some of the swing states will flip from what we've seen maybe in 2020 and in 2016. Ohio specifically, I think is still going to be a Trump state. I mean, we saw when it was up for governor, the Democratic candidate, Nan Whaley, barely held up against the Republican incumbent, Mike DeWine. And although Ohioans just voted to enshrine abortion rights and legalize marijuana, and those things are being challenged by Mike DeWine, I don't think it's a big enough issue or concern for Ohio voters that would be the determining factor, if that makes any sense. So I do think that Ohio will remain probably voting for Trump. I wouldn't anticipate Ohio going blue. But I think there's a chance with some of the other states, especially the same states that we were talking about earlier, which have generally gone Republican, but in some way enshrined the right to choose or some form of protection on reproductive freedom.
See, I don't want to seem too jumpy, but since we were talking about Ohio in the previous election that we had, I mean, at least the 2022 election, I think it's important to note how, like, when Senator Portman stepped down, then there was the race between Tim Ryan and J.D. Vance, and J.D. Vance won it. And now, but I guess is the Senate race that's in Ohio right now for 2024 is you have Sherrod Brown for the Democratic Party, but then you have Matt Dolan, Frank LaRose, and Bernie Moreno in the Republican Party running for it. And as of right now, Ohio is a very Republican-led state. I mean, we have a Republican governor, Republican House, Republican Senate, and Republican Chief Justice. But then the only thing that we're pretty much split on is our federal Senate seats. Is we have, as of right now, one Democrat, one Republican. I think after 2024, we might stay the same, might be different. I don't know. I haven't looked into that as much. But I think that's also a leading factor into how Ohio is going to play out for the presidential election. But I still think no matter what, I think Ohio is going to stay a red state. I don't think we're going to just flip blue based off everything we've seen. I don't, based on how Biden's performing approval wise on a very large spectrum of people. But I think that Ohio is going to stay a red state. And I think it's at least going to be a Trump state for the 2024 election. And I think that's going to stay the same for a lot of the battleground states that we saw in the 2020 election. I think if they were Trump states then, they're probably going to be Trump states now. I don't think we're going to see anything crazy. I do see certain fights in certain toss-up states, like mentioned before. Like, I feel like Michigan will be a weird one, or be a fun one to watch. Pennsylvania would be a fun one to watch. Arizona, Wisconsin, certain states like that are going to be interesting. But Ohio's not always been a swing state. Florida's not always been a swing state. But like, for like recent past elections, for like states that have been generally considered swing states, like Ohio and Florida, I think both of those will stay red. I don't think Florida's turning blue. I don't think Ohio's turning blue. I don't think Texas is turning blue. I think Texas will stay red, even though from what a lot of people have been thinking and seeing from like everyone who's like left the state of California and come to Texas, and everyone who's like come to surrounding states and just come to Texas, I don't think there's enough people to change that state. And based on what we talked about earlier with Governor Abbott, I don't think Texas is going to turn blue for a very long time. It might get a lighter shade of red, but I don't think it's getting blue.
Essentially. I don't know. I think Texas definitely is going to stay red. I really think it would take a lot for that to change. I think Ohio will, but it could be a closer margin, I do think, than it was in 2020. And maybe some of those states, like you were mentioning, will see a bigger fight and maybe some back and forth, or it's not as easy. Another key factor I think we're going to see at play is I mean, the recent states that have taken Donald Trump off their ballots, you know, we've got Colorado, and we'll see how that plays out, if that's going to go anywhere, or what's even going on with those states, but not even having him on the ballot. And obviously there are write-ins, but I mean, you've got a candidate in the presidential race, or most likely in the presidential race, who more than one state are progressing in a way that that person will not be on their ballot. I mean, I don't know of another time we've seen that. I have no idea if that's even ever happened before, but that, I mean, you've got a candidate that is that much disliked, or people have that little faith in this person being able to be president or doing the job well.
Or, I mean, essentially disliked, but there's a handful of other, like certain ones are legal challenges, other ones are just, I forget what state it is off the top of my head, but there was one state that Trump's not on the ballot for, but it was just because his campaign didn't file the paperwork. So he's not on that state's ballot. It had nothing, it didn't have anything to do with, oh, the state government disliked him, or like legally from what all that he's going through with like all of the court stuffs from quite literally everything, paying $83 million in that one, but also everything that had to surround January 6th and everything like that. But certain ones just come down to, just didn't file the right paperwork. And that was the same for that happened in New Hampshire with Biden wasn't on the New Hampshire primary. He had to be written in, and he still won the Democratic primary, but he was written in on that. And I think for states like that who don't have him on the ballots, I think write-in is probably what's going to be used. I mean, I think write-ins will be used quite effectively for Trump. I don't think it'll hurt him greatly in certain states like that, because certain states like that are probably going to stay blue anyway. Yeah. But yeah.
And I mean, I don't mean the reason he was taken off the ballot is because he's disliked, but more so a factor that pushed to get it to that point, you know, for states like where legal reasons are why he's not on the ballot. You're not going to see Ohio take him off the ballot because Mike DeWine and our government and Ohio probably wants to see him on the ballot, or a lot of people want to see him on the ballot. So like you said, it's not going to matter in the states. I don't think that it has happened in. It's not going to be a huge detrimental factor. Those states are probably not voting for him anyways. Or if they are, I don't think it being a write-in is going to hurt his chances of winning.
Well, I guess the biggest takeaway that I have for coming into 2024, a lovely pivotal election year, is just, I don't know, I guess the biggest thing is just be not hyper focused on one media outlet. I think it's a better idea to look into all these stories that come up about presidential candidates to look at those stories throughout like a broad section of media outlets and like different platforms, and to see how it's being interpreted and taken and like explained, unless it's cut and dry of some legal challenge of like, oh hey, the court said this is going to happen, like that one's a little different. But like for everything that we've seen so far, I guess, and like we've talked about, it being an election year means everything is focused on very, very heavily, and I think just broadening your view on certain media outlets is probably a better thing to stay the most informed.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the spotlight is definitely on all the candidates who are running. The spotlight's going to be on them. We know that the division is already heightened and there's a lot of disagreement, and I don't see that settling down. I see it only getting bigger, so 100% be cognizant of all the different media that everybody's consuming, especially with just what we've seen. I mean, people take videos, people are always recording, and then a video comes out of some congressperson, or there's always something going on. And that's a wrap for Athens Happens.
If you're interested in joining Middle Political, come see us in the Radio Television Communications Building on Sundays from 7 to 8 p.m. Also, make sure to check out thenewpolitical.com for more podcast episodes and other content. Thank you, and until next time.
Bye.